Hello everyone. Today we're going to be talking about some fat loss myths. My name's Violet Rivera. I'm a psychologist in Montreal, which is in Quebec, Canada. And this channel is about helping people to understand that our thoughts, our beliefs, and perceptions affect our actions and feelings. There are some common myths that we believe about fat loss that are just not true. And the first one I want to talk about, which actually characterizes obese people as having a character flaw, which is absolutely not the case, is that you're just too lazy to lose weight, that you don't have the willpower to lose weight. And as Jason Fung pointed out,
you're hungry because your body is increasing the ghrelin. You're decreasing your metabolism. You're not burning it off. That sets you up. It says you don't get fat because you're overeating. You're overeating because you're getting fat, right? Which sets you up for the proper question, what's making you get fat? What's the ultimate cause of obesity? And again, it's insulin. But if you go back to William Banting, he understood that refined carbohydrates led to obesity. Now we realize that refined carbohydrates increase your insulin, which leads to the obesity. And this guy, Banting, was in the 1850s. Right? Like 150 goddamn years ago, they knew this. If you try to treat it as a caloric deficiency and you say that it's a personal choice, you're going to fail. Right? If you understand that this is a disease which is related to insulin, then you understand why you treat it the way we do. So, what raises insulin the most from a dietary standpoint? Refined carbohydrates, right? The sugars, the refined grains. What raises it the least? Natural fats, right? Olive oil, avocado.
It's already been shown that there is a psychological connection between eating foods that contain sugar and the reaction that we have in our mind, right? That our brains actually react to sweet foods. Our brains actually react pleasure of eating sweet foods. So one of the things that I want people to understand is it's not about laziness as much as it is about there's a certain level of addiction that exists to sweet foods. And the more that we engage in eating sweet foods, the more that we want to eat sweet foods. And it's not just sweet like in sugar candy. Any food that has a carbohydrate, so even something that's savory like chips, like potatoes, the savory like I can't think of another savory food right now. But savory foods cause us to have the same reaction as long as there's a high level of carbohydrates in them. So it's important for us to recognize that there is a physiological reaction that is caused in our minds by eating these foods. The other idea I want to talk about is calories in, calories out, right? So this idea that basically no matter what you do, as long as you have a calorie deficit, then you're going to lose weight and it's going to be fine. I think one of the things that we're very short-sighted in is that, for example, if I eat a cookie, it's not the same thing as if I eat some bacon, for example. The macronutrients in a cookie and the macronutrients in bacon is not the same. Even if I eat 100 calories of cookie and 100 calories of bacon, what it does in my body is not the same. So my insulin response to a cookie is very different than my insulin response to bacon, which is important because our insulin response determines what happens to the calories that we eat. Do they get stored or are they free to be used readily, available readily at that point in time? What people ignore is that when we eat carbohydrate heavy foods, then our storage is turned on right away, and therefore we are storing majority of the calories that we're taking in. So this idea that calories in, calorie out is the answer, again, it's a fallacy because we are very aware that we can eat high calorie foods that have more fats in them and use that energy right away, so therefore just not store that energy, compared to when we eat high calorie foods or even just regular calorie foods that are carbohydrate based and most of that gets stored. So my point is this, the calories in, calories out doesn't work. One other thing that I mentioned that Dr. Fung pointed out is that the pathway that we are using when we're talking about storage, so ingestion and storage of or use of calories, is not the same system as when we're exercising. So basically, it's not that if I eat a cookie today and I go work out that that cookie is being burnt. No, because that cookie is affecting the insulin level that I have in this moment, whereas the energy that I'm using to exercise is coming from things that I ate yesterday. So it's not even the same system. It's not a, you know, calorie for calorie. The other thing to point out is that even if I were to do, you know, a run, or the amount of calories that you burn on a run or in any other kind of exercise, if you're working out at the gym, does not compare to the amount of food that we ingest daily. It's important for us to recognize that exercise is about strength building. It's about flexibility. It's about keeping our body healthy, versus diet and nutrition is about ingesting and weight control. So we should be conscious of the nutrient density of the food we're eating. But also, the other thing that we're doing is we're managing our weight when we eat food. So, and trying to separate those things, I think, is very important for us, because if we want to be healthy, we need to understand that these two things are very different. We eat food and our diet is about controlling our weight. Exercise is about being strong and healthy and able to do the things that we physically want to do. The other fallacy that exists that we need to be conscious of is the idea that our bodies absolutely need carbs. And this is an easy one. I'm not even going to spend a lot of time on it. Dr. Fung talks about this as well. There's no, and actually almost every doctor talks about this as well. There is no essential carbohydrate. Our bodies actually make carbohydrates, and therefore there isn't an essential carbohydrate. Again, psychologically, mentally, if we don't understand this, then we will keep consuming carbs thinking we need them, when in actuality we don't. What we need, so what we cannot produce ourselves, are proteins, and what we cannot produce ourselves, I don't believe we can, but there are essential fatty acids that we need. So those are the things that we need. The fourth myth that I want to talk about is that fats are bad. Okay, so there's so much talk out there about fats being bad. And I think one of the things that we've learned over the course of the last few years, and again, there's so many people talking about this, but the reason I'm talking about it is that from psychologically, we've grown up, at least I know my generation grew up being told that fat's going to make you fat. And now everything has shown that that's not the truth. By raising fats, at least in my diet, my weight has become regulated. And so one of the things that we recognize and start to recognize is that the things that we were told over years, which keeps us afraid, right? If I've been told over years that eating fat is going to kill me, I'm afraid to change that, even though all the evidence is showing that is not the case. So what you need to do is educate yourself. Don't take my word for it. Don't take anyone's word for it. Get out there and educate yourself. Find doctors and read the research. You can go to PubMed and read the research. Help yourself to understand what's reality and what's not reality. There has been so much low fat talk in the last 50 years. And yet, increasingly, our world is getting fatter and fatter. And if we go back to before 50 years ago, the adult population was at a good weight. Something happened in the last 50 years, and it's this low fat craze that's come along, and we stopped eating healthy fats, and we've started eating foods that have extra carbohydrates in them, high fructose corn syrup and just sugars in general to preserve, because sugar is a preservative. And we don't realize that we're causing our own weight to go up. One of the things that I will put out there as an idea to you is that not only do we need to understand that fats are not bad, we need to understand which fats are not bad. Yes, vegetable oil is not great for you. Yes, peanut oils and the oils that are man-made are not good for you. But natural oils, for example, the fat that comes along with the meat that you eat, that's fine. The fats like olive oil, coconut oil, which are real oils, like these products actually have oils in them, avocado oil, these are fine. We need to know which oils are good to eat and then consume them. And we need to know which fats are good to eat and consume them. Like, for example, the fat that comes in your eggs is great for you. So like I said, I think the most important thing that I would like you to do is do some research. Don't take my word for it. Don't take anyone's word for it. we need to make sure that we're doing the things that are keep us the most healthy. We need to also listen to our bodies. How do you feel when you eat low carb, low, and most people are doing low carb and low fat, which I think is another mistake that's happening, because you need an energy source. Carbohydrates are an energy source, but so are fats an energy source. And if we're taking the carbs out, then we have to replace with fats, which is what they did in the reverse, right? They took the fats out and they replaced with carbs because we need energy. But look at how this has affected our bodies, right? One of the things that they don't tell you about carbohydrates is that they are very, very inflammatory. Most people have such inflammatory reactions. I know that I did. And I wasn't even aware that I was having an inflammatory reaction until I took them out of my diet. And when I took them out of my diet, was I amazed to find out that a lot of joint issues that I was starting to experience went away. I felt so much better in terms of my ability to sleep. My body just felt better. I was able to cure a hip issue that was being created just by removing carbohydrates out of my diet. I think one of the things that we don't recognize is that we are doing things on a daily basis that harm us because it's a slow pace, because it's not a fast acting situation. It takes years to show itself. And I think that that's part of the issue. Now, the fifth thing is that you're genetically wired to be at a higher weight. Well, again, I think that a lot of people go through their routine, and because of your routine, you end up at a certain weight. One of the things, again, that I noticed is that, and just to talk, I'm going to go, but this kind of links back to the calories in, calories out idea. When I started to have my hip issue, which was about a year, just over a year and a half ago, I started to have my hip issue, and my first thought was, okay, well, maybe it was a weight issue because it was a hip issue. And I thought, okay, so, and I was overweight at the time. And not unhappy about being overweight, because I wasn't that much overweight, but just I was overweight at the time. And I thought, okay, well, maybe if I lose some weight, my hip issue goes away. So I started walking. And in all fairness, walking helped my hip. So what do we know? We know that movement and exercise is good for us, and that's terrific. It didn't change my weight at all. So I walked and walked and walked and walked, and I walked for more than 6 months. Every morning, without fail, I got up, I went for very long walks, and it didn't change my weight at all. However, it made me feel better. So I was energized, and my hip felt slightly better, but not at all solved. When I walked, I was able to sit for a few hours. When I didn't walk, I couldn't do it. So it helped me. However, here's the thing. My weight stayed exactly where it was. I took sugar out of my life. So I cut it down dramatically, and I lost weight. And what's interesting about this is that the reason I took sugar out of my life was because I learned that sugar is inflammatory, and I had an inflamed hip. So my thought was, take the sugar out, my hip inflammation will go away, I'll feel better. Well, I took the sugar out and my weight dropped. My hip also felt better. It felt better dramatically quickly, but it completely felt better about 9 months later. Is that right? No, I'm wrong. It felt dramatically better 5 months, 4 months later. I felt better 4 months later. My weight was also dropped. So here's the thing. Are we wired to be at a higher weight? No, I took sugar out of my life and my weight dropped. So if I was wired to be at a higher weight, then I would have stayed the same weight, even though I took sugar out, right? I replaced it with a bunch of fat. My weight would have stayed the same. So there's something happening there. We're not wired to be at a specific weight. And the final thing I'm going to say is that how I feel is unrelated to my weight. So that's not true, because my hip was hurting me. I had circulation issues. I had joint issues. Emotionally, I would say I felt good because I was happy in my life. Physically, I felt bad. I didn't know how bad I felt until I dropped the weight. So can I say that how you feel is unrelated to your weight? I can't say that. And I don't think it's true. I think the reality is that how you feel, how much you weigh impacts how you feel, especially because in our society, we're judged. We're judged by what we weigh. We're judged by how much we're able to maintain our weight at what's the correct weight. Now, here's the thing. When I was weighing more, I still engaged in all my activities. I snowboarded, I skied. In the summer, I cycled, I skateboarded. I do a lot of things. So was it stopping me from living my life? No. But was it affecting how I felt? Absolutely. As I know today, my back issues have gone away. Like so many things that I was struggling with that, you know what? When you get used to living these things, if you see, I can barely remember them because I was so used to them being there. They were just part of how I felt all the time. And now they're not. So yes, how you feel is affected by what you weigh. What are the psychological things that come along with this? Well, a lot of people eat emotionally. So it's interesting because if I feel bad and then I turn around and I eat because I feel bad, there's an emotional connection to eating. The same way that if I celebrate by eating, there's an emotional connection to eating. So then my weight and my overweight is not strictly calories in. See, this is the whole idea that this calories in, calories out. Yes, that plays a huge role on some level because, of course, if I don't eat calories, I will just lose because I'm not eating anything. But at the same time, there's a bigger psychological something happening there that if I eat because I'm happy or I eat because I'm sad or I eat because I'm bored or if I'm eating emotionally, then I'm not actually paying any attention to the calories at all, am I? And now if I'm doing emotional eating, that means that probably what I am eating is more about the taste than about the nutrient value. Okay, so now we know that I might not be being that careful about what I'm putting in my mouth. The other psychological issue is this idea that today we see fat as ugly. So if I'm overweight, I'm not as valuable as a person. If I'm overweight, I'm not as pretty. If I'm overweight, I'm not right. And so this reinforces the idea that you need to be thin. But then, of course, if I'm not thin, I'm going to feel bad about myself. And if I feel bad about myself, then I might eat. So you see the connection happening there. Your worth is based on how sexy you are, another psychological issue that we have. All of these things come back to me finding ways that I might not feel good about myself. And if I don't feel good about myself, I could end up eating more. Right? Emotional eating. What about the idea that I won't be able to control my eating when I'm at a party? Or so, you know, a lot of this comes up when you talk about people who are on, for example, the ketogenic diet. This idea that if I go to a party, how am I going to eat there because people aren't keto at the party, right? Because most people aren't keto. And so if I'm at a party, like how will I find food to eat? And what I find interesting about this argument is that at almost every party that I've ever gone to, there's been some kind of meat and some kind of salad, some kind of vegetable. So theoretically, if I'm at a party, the chance that I'm going to find something to eat is very high. Now, this makes me question then, when someone's saying this, what are you really saying? What you're saying is that you're afraid for people to know that you're eating differently than they are. And for me, the question is, who's more important, that other person or your health? When you go out and you have a specific diet that you're following, whether it's keto or paleo or vegan or regardless of what, you need to take into consideration how you feel when you eat the way that you eat. One of the nice things about eating a ketogenic diet is that there's usually something that you can eat no matter where you go. It's basically moderate protein, high fat, low carb, right? Extremely low carb. So if I'm eating that way, moderate protein means I can eat any piece of meat. And as long as I keep my carbs low, I'm probably going to be fine, right? And if I happen to be in a phase where I'm losing weight anyways, then the fat will come from me. So the truth is that we talk ourselves out of doing the thing that we know is healthy for us. So we talk ourselves out of eating appropriately when we go out because we're afraid that other people will notice that we're not eating like them. Now, the other part of that story is not just that. It's also that maybe I'm going to feel jealous because I can't have chips. I can't have cookies. I can't have, right? I feel like that's the other thing that we do to ourselves that's really unfortunate is that we focus on what we can't have versus on focusing on what we can have. Most people today wouldn't go out and order a steak or order a pork chop or order, right? Because it's going to come with fat on it. And they're like so afraid to eat the fat. Most people today don't eat bacon because they're afraid of the fat. Most people, like, there's so many things that you can eat when you're on a low carb, high fat diet, especially on a keto diet. There's so many things that you can eat that other people don't eat anyways, that the truth is that you're in a good situation regardless. You're not eating high carb things, but you're eating the high fat things. So rather than focus on what you can't have, try to focus on what you can have. And the other unfortunate psychological issue that I see often is the idea that I can't give up X. So whatever food that you love, that you think you can't give up, I guarantee you that if you start focusing on your health more so than on individual foods, one of the things that I recognized when I had my hip issue and then I moved forward and I just said, you know what, I'm taking all the carbs out, because at the beginning, my thought was carbs are inflammatory, get them out of your life and see what happens to your hip. That was my plan. But when I took carbs out and saw how good I felt, taking out the carbs didn't even seem like a problem at that point anymore. It was like, why? What was I waiting? What was I going to gain by having these foods? Now, of course, I think for any person, you know, you have this I can't give up attitude and it sticks with you for a little bit. I'm a person, right? It was in my head that, oh, you know, like at the beginning I was feeling great. And then at some point it crossed my mind. I was like, oh, I'm never going to eat these things again. And it was in my head a little bit until what happened? Well, guess what? I ate a starchy vegetable and I was woken in the middle of the night with joint pain that I hadn't felt in months. And guess what I learned? I'd rather not eat a starchy vegetable and feel good than eat a starchy vegetable and feel like this. And I feel like for every person on the planet, there's going to be your version of this somehow. If you allow yourself to get healthy and then tempt fate and go back to how you were eating before and feel like I felt bad, not even just a little bad, I felt horrible. It reminds you that food wasn't helping you. Now, maybe you'll be one of the few that can go back and forth and feel nothing. And that's terrific too. None of us are going to know until we try, right? But it's a myth to think that I can't give it up, because trust me, I haven't had a cookie. I haven't had a chocolate bar. I gave it up, right? And if anyone knows me, they know that chocolate was my kryptonite and I gave it up. So we can. Now, how do we do this, right? And I guess the biggest part of this whole story is, how do you do it? You do it by focusing on the next five things that I'm about to tell you. Number one, eat healthy food. And I know that seems like a silly thing to say, but it's the reality. When I focus on eating healthy, nutrient-dense food, then where does a cookie fall in, right? Where does chips fall in? They're neither nutrient-dense nor healthy. When you focus on nutrient-dense, healthy foods, you end up in the space that Dr. Berg talks about. I don't know if you've heard of Dr. Berg. He's one of the doctors that talks about ketogenic diets. 7 to 10 cups of vegetables and salad per day, high fat, moderate protein. Honestly, he says it, because it's so important that we need to do it. So does Dr. Barry say it. Vegetables, protein, fat. We don't need cookies. You don't need chips. What you need to do is eat nutrient-dense food and stop when you're satiated. And you eat again the next time you feel hungry. If you do that, you'll feel good. The other thing you need to allow yourself to do is drink adequate liquids. It doesn't necessarily mean you're drinking 8 cups a day, because actually you probably don't need it, especially since you're not eating carbs. You're not going to be retaining water. So your balance of water, liquids in your body is going to be better, but you need to drink enough to feel good, to feel okay, to feel well. Get enough sleep. Now, this is the card that I didn't know was so important. And once I did more research, I figured out how important it is. When we sleep well, we allow our hormones to be well regulated. So it's part of the process of regulating, sleeping at adequate periods of time. So sleeping through the night, the night hours. So especially those hours, you know, between 10 and 2, like being asleep during those times, apparently really, really important. there was a Sean Stevenson has a book out about this, Sleep Smarter. And apparently that's a really, really important thing to do, is to sleep during the right periods of time. And I think that when we allow ourselves to do the things that help us to feel good, like sleeping the amount that we should and at the times that we should, it helps our body to regulate itself. You know, so much of what's wrong with us is about poor nutrition, poor exercise, and poor diet. Which brings me to the next part, which is move your body. I'm not saying that exercise is not necessary. Of course it is. Exercise helps you to be strong. Exercise helps you to be fit and able to do what you want to do. So you need to exercise. It doesn't necessarily mean you need to exercise in the gym. You need to exercise in a way that you love it and you will do it. So for me, it's walking. I love walking and I love sports. So I love skiing. I love biking. So I do things that I know I'm going to do because I love them. You need to find your thing and do it because you love it. The final thing that I want to talk about is managing your stress. So that's talking about managing the people in your life. That's managing work. That's managing social interactions, hobbies. You know, there's good stress and there's bad stress, right? So for example, minor obstacles at work can be a good stress. You know, small interactions with like debates with friends can be a good stress. Working out is a good stress. However, the flip side is that if I have constant negative interactions with my spouse, if I feel unappreciated at work, like those kind of stresses will damage you because it keeps your cortisol levels high. And when our cortisol levels are high, it interferes with our other hormones. And especially one of the things that high cortisol can do in terms of your weight loss is it can cause you to kind of slowly break down protein, creating high levels of sugar in your system. Because don't forget, when your cortisol is high, usually that means that there's a stressor in front of you that you need to fight somehow. And your body is going to want you to have sugar for quick interactions. And because it doesn't know that the stress is a person that you're just going to talk to. And so that will affect your weight, though. If you have extra sugar in your system because your cortisol is putting it there, that will affect your weight. So we want, because it's going to make your insulin go up, we want to focus on managing your stress so that you can maintain good positive health. I really hope that you found this video helpful, and especially that last one, managing your stress. Like this is, again, where interacting with a psychologist and learning how to manage people, learning how to manage work situations, learning how to manage family situations, learning how to improve your relationships. That's the kind of thing that you can do that's going to improve your ability to have a happier life. One of the things that is important for us to recognize is that every one of these things that we're trying to work on is going to lead to you improving your life long term. I really appreciate you sticking with the podcast all the way to the end. And if you wouldn't mind, just take a moment to rate me so that my podcast can show up in more and more people's feeds. That'd really help me. And if you have ideas for future topics that you'd like to hear me talk about, because I do want to make these videos for you guys, then take a moment and send me an email at happytakeswork@gmail.com. And I'm more than happy to make some specific content just for you guys. All right, I'll talk to you in the next video.